Ethics, Aging, and the Coming Healthcare Challenge. And that's the title of a conference on Thursday at the Pontifical Lateran University. Co-sponsored by the Pontifical Council for the Family and the Acton Institute for the Study of Religion and Liberty, the conference is bringing together academics, practitioners, clergy, and policymakers from around the world to discuss how different advances in science and society affect what it calls intergenerational solidarity. Dr. Michael Hoden is a senior fellow at the Council of Foreign Relations, researching the social, economic, and political consequences of aging populations, and one of the featured speakers. He told me changes are needed for the world to handle the challenges of growing old.
The longevity that we've achieved in the 20th century, adding over three decades to life, is one of the great social transformations of all time. It was roughly 47 at the beginning of the 20th century, and now it's over 80, and we're still counting. The impact of that on the political, economic world is huge, because the basic social infrastructure that we've created in the 20th century is not fit for purpose to address this longevity challenge that we have in the 21st century. It's something we should be celebrating, but we need to reframe public policy in order to address that.
You talk about this, and it's funny because just today, the president of Russia in his State of the Nation address said we're not having children, and we need to have more children. They were losing over a million people a year in Russia because of this.
Well, there are two parts to this aging population phenomenon, the reality that we're living with now in the 21st century. One is that we're living longer. The second, however, is that in most countries around the world, we have not been making babies. So the fertility rates are at or below replacement. That's true in Europe. The United States is a little bit above replacement. So therefore, the social and political impact is huge because the proportion of people over and under 60 will have changed dramatically. And that's true today, but it's going to be even more true over the next 10, 20, and 30 years. Therefore, we need to have different kinds of approaches to aging. I'm suggesting we have, for example, a concept of a new middle age and the idea that during a life course, we're going to work and live longer and differently. No longer can we think about retiring at 55 the way we did at the end of the 19th century when these systems were built. So it is a transformation, and we're looking at that as a great change.
It's a change that people are having a hard time accepting if you look at right now around Europe, in Greece, in France. Young people who, as you point out, aren't having children themselves are holding riots to make sure that they have the same benefits as their parents and grandparents, even though there's no one there to pay for it.
Well, in the global coalition that we've created, which is of sectors, companies across sectors, across geography, technology, healthcare and pharmaceuticals, food, banking. The idea here is that we don't automatically just look to the public, society, or government for the answers, that the answers are private sector, innovative solutions about how we live longer, healthy aging. Healthy aging is not necessarily going to come about as a result of government programs. The idea of living longer is something that we have to take as a great celebration and find innovative solutions so that we can have a different life course of learning, working differently into our 80s. That can be achieved if we apply innovative solutions through pharmaceuticals and technology to biomedicine so that we can find the answers to the scourge of Alzheimer's, for example. Alzheimer's today costs $604 billion globally, 1% of GDP. That will explode beyond what the eye can see over the next two and three decades unless we do something about it. And that something is not what government can do, but it's what the marketplace will do. It's what innovative solutions around technology and biomedicine will do.
Changing tack, but keeping on this issue you're just talking about, innovative solutions are often, when they come out, very expensive. This has become an issue around the globe. A lot of countries, for example, have wanted to put out generic alternatives to some of these new drugs. How does one balance this, these life-saving new drugs that come out that are often very expensive and the people who need them can't afford them?
Well, again, the biomedical solutions for hypertension, diabetes in the future, Alzheimer's one day, the cost of those are barely scratching the surface compared to the solutions they will provide for society and for us as individuals. The idea of looking at spending on that kind of underlying research to find solutions for the future is something that we should start thinking about as answers, not as problems. If we think about this purely as a cost, then we'll never get there. If one thought of the answers to polio is to provide more iron lungs, we could never afford all the iron lungs. What we found was an innovative biomedical solution. HIV/AIDS is an interesting example that in 20 short years, we've turned it from a virtual death sentence to a manageable illness. We need to do that for cardiovascular, for diabetes, for Alzheimer's. These are age-related diseases. With Alzheimer's, if you're over 65, you have a chance of one in three risk of getting it. If you're over 85, one in two. So with longevity, the number of people that will have it on the planet is massive over the next 2 to 3 decades. This will unhinge or derail the 21st century from a fiscal point of view, let alone the human catastrophe that's at hand. So these innovative solutions, would that that were the problem.
When we talk about innovative solutions and aging, how can we justify spending that much money on what ends up being so little extra life?
Well, again, if we're looking at longevity as one of the great miracles of the 20th century and continued longevity as one of the great extensions in the 21st, what we want to do is now find solutions that will add quality of living to that and healthy aging into this longevity. So you get technology companies like Intel or pharmaceutical companies like J&J or Pfizer or Novartis, and I could go on. But they're looking at solutions that will allow people to live longer. And for example, with Intel, technologies to live at home, which is one of the answers to the growing costs of long-term care from a public point of view. I was recently up with a man named Joe Coughlin up at the MIT Age Lab. And the innovative stuff that's going on there is phenomenal, whether it's ranging from new solutions around transportation through housing. They're even looking at different kinds of technology to support financial instruments that will allow for a different life course of savings. I mean, we, again, have to look at this not – aging populations is not about old people. Aging populations is about a demographic transformation. It's a great miracle of longevity. And how do we begin to live our lives differently, assuming that we're going to now live not into the late 50s or 60s, but into the 90s, and we want to do it in as healthy a way as possible? That's the goal, and that's a wonderful goal.
You talk about some of these innovations, be it technology or even methodology, economics. But what role does the family have? Hopefully these people have some family somewhere, but more and more people aren't. They have few or no kids. They have no brothers or sisters. How has this affected growing old?
Well, it's a great question. I have more of a personal than a professional view on that, frankly. I believe that family is the central institution of civilization and for society. One of the reasons we have this demographic challenge that we have is not just that we have this great longevity, but as I indicated, we largely in the developed world have not been making babies. and replacing ourselves. So the proportion of over and under 60 is such that, you know, how do you support people living into their 80s under the old traditional model? And if you add to that the fact that through a variety of factors of people not forming families the way traditionally they had maybe in advanced societies, the mobility that exists, you know, these are social challenges with enormous ethical consequences. But again, I think, you know, from where I come, and particularly this global coalition and the kind of public policy research we're doing at the Council on Foreign Relations, the issues are ones of looking for solutions that will be innovative, that can give health and quality to these extra 30, and it'll soon be 40 and 50 years. I mean, the idea, when you think about it, that we were living roughly only to 47 at the beginning of the 20th century, that's stunning. And the transformation that's taken place has not been followed by a parallel alignment in either public policy or social transformation, perhaps quite to the reverse. So I'm hoping that this conference that Acton is sponsoring will bring a lot of these topics to the fore. It will make people more aware. This is a social transformation that we're talking about, not just public policy, and it's not at all just about government. It's about us as individuals, and it's about how societies are going to organize themselves. Aging populations means that we need to think about organizing differently. And when I look at global institutions, whether it's from the WHO through to the UN to the G20 to governments, they're focused on things like the environment or HIV/AIDS or gender and ethnicity, all very important topics. I am stunned that we don't have an organizing framework around aging. And if we did, we would be able to cover these topics both from an innovative public policy point of view, also from the standpoint of the social transformation and individual accountability.